What's going on, everybody? Welcome in. It's the Locked On Eagles podcast. As always, I'm your host, Louis DiBiase, alongside my co-host, Gino Camilleri. We are coming to you on this Monday edition, starting another week up as the Eagles start up their second week of training camp. They had their fourth practice today at NovaCare Complex. We'll get into the recap of that. There were some really good bright spots for both the offense and the defense, and that'll kind of get us into who have been the biggest winners and losers of the first four practices with the Eagles. And then we got some other stuff today that I want to get into, specifically with Doug Peterson and his flexibility and knowing how to change the message each year. And then also, we have our own insider here. Gino Camilleri squeezed this what could have been crazy story out of former Eagles general manager Joe Banner. We'll just hint it at that. I don't know if anybody saw it on Twitter, but for those of you that don't know, that'll be coming up in the third segment. I don't want to say what it was just because it was super cool that Gino pulled Joe Banner out of the clouds to drop this bomb on us about something that could have happened after the 2010 season. So we'll just leave it at that, and we'll get into it. I'm going to bring in now my co-host, Gino. We'll get into that later, but Gino, what's going on, man?
Not much, you know, just getting this insider biz on. I broke the Corey Graham story last summer.
People You've had a few do remember. Spots.
Yeah, that was before my time here, so I fortunately lived below Corey Graham's brother. I know I've mentioned that a couple times, so I had the inside scoop on a bunch of things, told me some cool stories about what the guys were doing after the Super Bowl. It was really a surreal experience, but things are good, man. I'm busy. Last day of this semester of the Scouting Academy wraps up. Tomorrow we have our final call. This was a local area scouting class, so I had to dive deeper into the value programs around New York, Ohio, PA, and just really dig into some of the prospects. And I'm really excited. We were in the depths of last draft season, Lou. I feel like I'm going to be in it even more this go around because you and I were trying to get some credentials, trying to go to some college training camps, trying to go to some college games. We're just trying to bring you guys as much as we can, and the more and more we get into the depths of football, the better understanding we have. And I love looking around the Twitterverse these last couple days, seeing guys that we pounded the table for get their name out there. I just asked Trevor Sikkema of the Draft Network how Bruce Anderson was looking today in Tampa camp. Said he was shining in the pass game, Lou, expect him to do. So, yeah, guys that we – J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, one of the Eagles guys, who's my guy. We see him and Miles Sanders, too, but some bright spots right here in our own camp. But it's cool, and we're literally over a week away from a preseason game.
Next Thursday,
unfortunately,
they take on the Titans.
We'll be at a concert in Denver, Colorado, but I will definitely watch it back on Game Pass. But we're here, Lou. It's finally here, 1 week away.
Yep, we are 1 week away until the Eagles play football. It's so cool. And you know what's awesome? I mean, you mentioned like our draft guys from last year. And Bruce Anderson, like I'm telling you, he is going to be the guy in Tampa Bay this year at some point in the backfield. But there's other players, too, that have been popping around camps. Specifically, some of my guys from last year. Your boy Chauncey Gardner-Johnson out of Florida right now, looking pretty good, as is one of my favorite receivers in the class, Hakeem Butler in Arizona, who fell for some reason. I was really blown away that he fell to the fourth round. He came up with this incredible back shoulder one-handed catch yesterday at Cardinals camp. So a couple of our guys are shining at camp this year.
Yeah, one guy who unfortunately is not, though, is Divine Azigbo. I'm kind of shocked about that.
That's right. You're bringing in some back.
Yep, they've been bringing in some running backs. They brought in Alfred Morris. They brought in Theo Riddick for visits down there in New Orleans. So Azigbo might be a guy who unfortunately is going to get cut, but that's the nature of the game, Lou. There's good teams and good players are going to get cut, but it's up to the even better teams to go and poach those players. The Eagles make their living on finding guys late in the season and at the end of training camps. You look back a couple years ago, they found Bryce Treggs, were able to get a couple good minutes out of him after they snatched him up from the Niners a couple years ago. You look back at Craven LeBlanc on waivers, that's another big pickup. But the talent acquisition period is not over yet. Even though there's going to be cuts, there's still going to be guys that you're going to want to keep your eye on, either if they're going to be cap casualties, if they're at a position that's too deep for any given team, or in trades. Howie Roseman has made tons of trades, and that's how we inevitably ended up at what we're going to talk about in segment three here. But Howie Roseman is no stranger to moving a couple guys during training camp. The big one, the Jordan Matthews for Ronald Darby deal a couple years ago. Alan Barber, he shipped out of town. I think he's had upwards of over 15, close to 20, 25 trades in his time as a GM during the training camp season. So
Sam Bradford trade, of course, right before the season started.
Of course, yeah. So they may look good on paper right now, but they may change within the blink of an eye, and that's the NFL. It's a business, and business moves are going to happen, especially this kind of year.
And we know that more so than any position when it comes to cornerback. And you mentioned Cravon LeBlanc. You mentioned Ronald Darby right now. And we have some updates on the health of these guys because, man, just like last year, the Eagles were down five corners. That's why LeBlanc had to come in, because not only Ronald Darby was hurt, not only Jalen Mills, but then Sidney Jones went down. Then Avante Maddox goes down. Then Rasul Douglas. At one point in a game, they had Chandon Sullivan, Devonta Bosby, and Cravon LeBlanc as they're starting three corners. And right now, they're a little banged up once again at this position. Cravon LeBlanc has injured his foot. Darby is nursing the torn ACL he suffered against Dallas last year. Jalen Mills is on the PUP list. His foot injury, Gino, is still a huge mystery. We did get an update, though, on LeBlanc. LeBlanc appears to be week-to-week, according to Doug Peterson. The Eagles don't like to divulge a whole lot of information when it comes to injuries, but he does have a foot injury. He could be back by week one. Darby also probably going to be back by week one, so that's why I'm not really nervous. It's still ridiculous how unlucky these Eagles corners are when it comes to health and just how it just continues to pile up. But I'm feeling still pretty optimistic about it, not only because of how good the other three have looked so far in camp, and Maddox, Douglas, and Jones, but because it seems like at least LeBlanc and Darby should be ready, if not week one, but the first few weeks of the season. So they brought in Orlando Scandrick, Gino, but I'm not really reading much into it, because if LeBlanc and or Darby come back almost right when the season starts, that's four or five corners already that you have in the depth chart. Whenever Mills comes back, I don't expect Scandrick to be on the roster long, to be honest. I mean, they need another body right now in camp, but I don't know about you. I don't really think he's going to be here much longer.
Yeah, just a quick note before I talk about, unfortunately, Orlando Scandrick, which if you would have told me that 10 years ago as an Eagles fan, I probably would have yelled at you, because I hate the Dallas Cowboys and I hated Orlando Scandrick. He was one of those guys that I could not stand for the Cowboys, and now he's in an Eagles uniform. But before we touch on that, Jalen Mills, Lou, who is the one person who said time and time again that they did not believe Jalen Mills would be ready for the start of the season?
You
got it. I knew. I just had a weird inclination that Mills injury was way deeper than many of us thought. We heard reports, Doug Peterson saying it's going to be a week to week, and then it becomes end of the season. And then he's supposed to be out of the walking boot in spring. He's still in the walking boot. Still in the walking boot in the summer. He's still in the walking boot now. I think this injury is a very prolonged injury. One of those, the ones that these AJ Green, the basketball players start to get, that the one that lingers, and that any little smidgen of cutting the wrong way can really put it back. Look at Greg Olsen. He's had that foot injury that's lingered him his entire career, just about. And those things don't go away. But the good thing is, Lou, that Howie Roseman, unlike last year, isn't sitting on his laurels. Coming into that season last year, they had a deep cornerback pool, if you think about it. They had exactly what they had now, outside of Cravon LeBlanc, but they believed what they had in Devonta Bosby. When guys got hurt, they weren't too apt to bring in guys that were going to suit them better. Now they are. Even though you don't bring in Orlando Scandrick to come here and you don't expect him to have a roster spot by the time it comes around, if things do go south for Cravon and things do go south for Jalen Mills, you now have a guy here who is going to be your fifth and sixth corner that just played in the playoffs last year. As much as you may hate Orlando Scandrick, he has big-time experience. He's not the best. He's not what he was 5-6 years ago. But he has meaningful game time experience. Would I like to take him into a season over an undrafted free agent, over another Devonta Bosby, or we even talk back to our Jacory Shepard Award, Lou, the young rookie that many people talk big about that isn't going to really do anything in the regular season? I'll absolutely take Orlando Scandrick 10 times out of 10. But if Cravon heals correctly, and hopefully this isn't a lingering injury, much like Jalen Mills' injury, I don't expect Scandrick to be here long at all. But the good thing is they're making every option possible, moving guys inside, moving guys outside, showing looks at safety. They're doing everything they can and taking every possible precaution to make sure that they have not just plan A and B squared away, but C, D, E, and F if things do go south.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is the problem, too, with when you're this secretive with injuries, it kind of makes guys look bad, and that's why I get players last year were frustrated and some were going to see other doctors, because, you know, when you do say Jalen Mills is week to week, at the halfway point of the season last year, and now he might not even be ready for the season opener in 2019. Mm-hmm. I mean, that comes back on the players, too. It's not a good look sometimes, and they've been so mysterious with Mills and with Mac Hollins, right? That's why me and you joke all the time that he doesn't even exist, is because of this secretive style and approach when it comes
to... And he got hurt again.
Yeah, exactly. He just got hurt the other day. He just got back to practice. So Mac Hollins, I don't know how many ladders he's been walking under, but just can't catch a break, much like these corners. So they did get an extra body in Orlando Scandrick, who did start 7 games last year in Kansas City. Neither one of us expect him to be there a whole lot this season. Let's hope that's the case, because then they won't have the catastrophic amount of injuries that they did last year. Getting a little bit before we take a break, getting into Monday's practice, Gino, it was a good day for a lot of our guys here. Wentz and Deshaun continue to click. They hit on a deep route down the sideline on Avante Maddox for a touchdown, a big play in the screen game, Wentz to Deshaun, and a 20-yard corner route they hit each other on. That is one of the – I think that's going to be a route that they both are going to really click on this year. Wentz and Deshaun, Gino, that might be – I mean, last year we were talking about the chemistry between Wentz and Ertz. Mm-hmm. This year with Wentz and Deshaun, that is all I hear practice after practice. Even Dan Orlovsky said he was at camp today. He was at Eagles camp, and he said Wentz was putting on a, quote, dang clinic of anticipation, ball placement, and touch and zip, all things that pertain to flat out, in all caps, dealing. So I'm feeling really good about this passing game right now.
Absolutely. And you hear every single day that he's completing passes to different people, and that's a good thing. You look back a couple days ago, Dallas Goedert shined with a nice one-handed grab. You're not hearing much about Ertz and Alshon, and frankly, I don't want to. I want to see new relationships forming in the passing game, and you want him to get comfortable with the guys who haven't been there as long. And for him, the one person that we say that can put this offense over the edge is Deshaun Jackson, and for them to have a spot-on relationship is key. You saw after practice yesterday, or 2 days ago, because they were off yesterday, that Deshaun and Carson, they weren't on top of the game during practice. They stayed after, and they started running routes together. These guys aren't going to sit on their laurels. Oh, yeah, we have Deshaun Jackson. We have Alshon Jeffrey. They're there putting in the work. And you brought up Doug Peterson's messaging. I think this message and this idea that these guys they're playing for a Super Bowl, yes, but 1 week at a time, 1 day at a time. I think Carson said it best. If you think about the future, you're going to miss what's right in front of your face, and that's key. The little things are key. The Super Bowl is won right now. Look what happened with the offseason that they were presented with in 2017 versus what they were presented with in 2018, and look at the results based off of that. 2017, full offseason for Carson Wentz, gets to connect with his new weapon in Alshon Jeffrey and the new weapons that they brought in to supplement the number 17, Nelson Agholor. 2018 was a lot different. Carson doesn't have an offseason. He doesn't get to grow the rapport. They don't take an offseason trip. One season ended with a Super Bowl. The other ended in a disappointing fashion. The direction they're heading in, the offseason production that they're going to continue to show throughout camp and hopefully in these preseason games, is a thing of beauty. And I want them to continue to, yes, if they have a bad practice, go out and run more routes. And if they have a good practice, go out and run more routes as well. And Carson is that true leader, and he's building his bond with a guy who was blackballed out of town in Deshaun Jackson. It has now come back with a different message under his belt and a different mentality, and that's huge. You want to see the veterans going out there and balling out every day, and hey, if these guys are seeing if Mac Hollins and Shelton Gibson are seeing Deshaun go out there running routes with Carson after practice, you better believe that those guys are going to take that into consideration and want to get better themselves.
And it's exciting, too, when it comes to Deshaun Jackson, because as I mentioned the other day, I wrote an article for 97.3 ESPN South Jersey about how this second stint in Philadelphia with Deshaun should feature a new creative way to use him. Because I think, at the start of his career, you look at 2008 and 2009, and even 2010 really was the last year, before he got that big payday and became known as this just the most dangerous deep threat in the NFL, he was used in a number of different ways, you know, reverses in the screen game, Mm-hmm. Chip Kelly was using him at running back a lot, specifically in that game against Minnesota in 2013. But I feel like over the years, because they wanted to protect him, because the Eagles needed him and Washington needed him in Tampa Bay, and because he was so good at just being a field stretcher, that offense has kind of got, it's a lot like what I talk about with Darren Sproles. Maybe it got a little bit too simplistic with DeSean Jackson at times, but it's really awesome to hear that they're lining him up all across the formation, and to see the Eagles tweet out that video of him in the screen game taking that one nearly pretty much to the house with all that incredible blocking down the field. It's really encouraging that Doug Peterson is getting creative with this offense, because I think with so many weapons, that's what you got to do. DeSean, Wentz, they've been big-time winners of this camp. Gino, who else do you think has been a big winner so far for the first four practices?
Yeah, just one last note on DeSean. Adam Kaplan did a great job of calling this out before they even acquired him and saying that many around the NFL continued to speak highly of DeSean Jackson and his athletic ability on the field, saying, quote, that he hasn't lost a step.
No, if you look at
a lot of reports out of the camp the last 2 days, that's exactly what people are saying. So shout out to Adam Kaplan for hitting that right on the head in the offseason. And it is huge that a guy who has made his money being a lethal athletic threat that has great straight line speed and lateral agility still continues to play with that, because you see a lot of these burners, once they lose a step, that's the mark of the end of their career. So to see DeSean continuing to excel in that department is huge. But in regard to guys that are shining right now, I have to go right to my boy Sid. I mean, you look at any beat writer right now, they are saying Sidney Jones is having an incredible camp. He came away with a one-handed bobbling interception a couple days ago. He's doing what I knew and what many around the NFL knew that he could do coming into this league. He is a guy that can go out there and win with his length. He has the great hips, great feet, great athleticism. But the thing that killed him is that he wasn't healthy. He said it in a quote to Ruben Frank that he wasn't healthy a lot of last season. So just imagine that even though he wasn't healthy, he still put out some good games on tape last year. You saw it in the Dallas game when he was just getting blown by, that he definitely was hurt. It reminded me a lot of that Leotis McKelvin game a couple years ago when he was playing on a hamstring and you knew he was 3 to 4 steps slower than any wide receiver he was covering. But now he's back. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He was a guy that was supposed to be a number one draft pick, tears his Achilles, goes out there, gets hurt again, it cannot play, and now he's out there having a stellar camp. This is everything you want to see out of a guy like him, Lou, even though he might not be 5 to 10 pounds bigger, which we hoped, which we still don't have an official confirmation on, but from reports, he still looks about the same size. But still, he's going out there, he's using his great ability, his mental ability, his athletic ability to win in those one-on-one matchups and be that true press corner that we fully believe that he could coming into the NFL.
Yep, it was never about talent with him. The fact that people were calling him a bust to me was just, it's very similar. Look, he hasn't done what Ben Simmons has done on the court in the NBA compared to what Jones has done in the NFL, but it was always about health. And I think much like Simmons, it was just another guy that I think is unjustly bagged on and for what he can do on the field. And I just don't think that's the case. And I just had that feeling, look, if it's going to be an open competition, and for some, it's more so than others. For Sidney Jones, he, especially with the Mills injury, he is a favorite to be on the field the majority of the time next year. When he would get the opportunity, when he's healthy and on the field, there's not a corner in this group, including my guy Rasul Douglas, that I think can ball out as much as Sidney Jones. Speaking of Rasul Douglas, though, Gino, he had a one-handed pick today again. Ruben Frank, who you mentioned, he called out Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas as two players that have really shined at camp so far, as is Avante Maddox. We did CB Wars last week. Man, I just wish, even if Darby and LeBlanc and Mills, when they come back, the starting three they have right now, I do not want those guys to come off the field.
No, I think you said it great. Unfortunately, Darby's going to have to see some action.
He will at
any given time. But them moving Avante inside and outside really leads me to believe that they're still under this presumption that they believe he can play safety, because a lot of what they do with their safeties is line them up at the line of scrimmage. You've seen it with Malcolm Jenkins. You've seen it with Rodney McLeod. So if you believe that he could play corner, great. If you believe that he could play safety, that's also great. But make sure, if you think he could play safety, at least get him in those positions in camp. I haven't seen too much of him playing safety this camp. I might be missing something there, but a lot of the focus has been at him at cornerback. Maybe they're waiting for Darby to return. Who knows? Just to see him get healthy. But if you're going to have any inclination to play him at safety, make sure he's getting some reps there, please. I don't want him to get thrown into the fire. It's a very difficult position to learn. It's not one of those things you just go out there and play center field. It may look like that, but you have to be able to diagnose route concepts. You have to know who you're going to double at any given time. You have to know when to come down into the box. Yes, he possesses a lot of that, but a lot of it is reps. It's like anything. It's like being a podcast host. You got to have reps on the mic. It's like working out. You got to go to the gym. It's like any other thing. Practice makes perfect. And if they truly believe that Avante can play safety there in week one and two of the preseason, let him get one series at corner and then immediately move him to safety. Like, if that's what you want to see, let him play with the twos, threes, and fours, but at least let him get the reps to have the ability to do so. Because like you said, I want Sid on the field, I want Rasu on the field, and I want Avante on the field at any given time.
Switching sides here to offense before we take our break. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside has kind of gone under the radar, mostly because there's just, again, so many weapons. But a dude at wide receiver that, and I was surprised. So I did a formations podcast last week. I tried to create some different offensive formations for the Eagles to run with next year, some creative ways to get all these guys involved. And one of them was this Towers lineup where you have these all these 6'3 plus targets in the red zone for you. You know, Ertz, Goddard, Alshon, Arcega-Whiteside. Doug Peterson actually was working with that exact formation, but instead of Arcega-Whiteside, Gino, here comes this guy, Carlton Agadosi. This 6'6 wide receiver who really nobody's been talking about. He's been on the roster bubble. You know, when we talk about that 6 wide receiver spot, we talk about Greg Ward Jr., Shelton Gibson, Mark and Michelle, you know, Braxton Miller, those kind of players. But here's Agadosi, who Doug Peterson specifically mentioned today as someone who is similar to Alshon Jeffrey. He's been learning with Alshon. He's been at the hip, much like Dillard has been with Jason Peters. You know, if they want to keep the size here instead of going more so with another speed guy like a Gibson, if they're okay just having all these crazy big targets, Agadosi is someone right now that I have really, he's grabbed my attention the first 4 days of practice.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how time is just a flat circle, basically, and DeSean Jackson is once again a Philadelphia Eagle, and we are now acting under this presumption that Chip Kelly loved to preach that big people beat up little people, and Doug Peterson going out there and throwing this monster-sized receiving core out there is exactly that, because, frankly, how many teams have one, maybe two corners that exceed 6'1"? Mm-hmm. Not many. I mean, Dallas with Byron Jones and Chido Awuzie, I can think of. Maybe Josh Norman with Landon Collins, too, but there's not many that have these towering secondary units, and that's exactly what you want to get on the field. And you now have Agadosi, who could be your sixth guy you could toss out there. You have J.J. Arcega-Whiteside you could toss out there. You have Dallas Goedert you could toss out there. You have Zach Ertz, Alshon Jeffrey. You just have a gamut of guys that you can throw out there, an entire chest full of pieces that you could throw on the chess table at any given time. And that's the greatness about it, Lou, is that we say that, yes, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside has gone by the wayside, but maybe that's a good thing. Maybe them getting looks for other guys is good. Maybe you're not putting too much of an emphasis on the guys that you know you're going to target early in the season, because I think they know what J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is right now. They know they know in his first year he's going to be a red zone threat, who will provide you with a little bit of downfield juice. Now they want to get some looks to some other guys. Maybe Agadosi is a guy who can come in there, an athletic freak that we don't know anything about, and can just be that Ifeanyi Moma type character that
what a reference.
Talk about a shout out. That's a throwback right there. But yeah, you always get these Paul Turners. You always get the
Rasheed Bailey, Fluen, was it?
Rasheed Bailey, the Davin Fluens, the Russell Shepard, the Jacory Shepard, whatever Shepard you want to name, but there are going to be guys that excel in camp, and we say it time and time again. You want to breed competition, and it's a great thing that these guys that you had no idea of 2 weeks ago are coming out there and having good camps. Who's the, like, Singleton, I think, is this linebacker?
Yep.
He played for Calgary Rough Riders in the CFL, and now he's come here, and he's gotten some praise from some beat writers. He's gotten some praise from Jim Schwartz. It's these guys that it's a tip of the cap to your scouting department. Yes, they might not be the best players in the world, but you have an offense and a defense that has areas that you could fill with players that have niche skill sets, and those guys have that niche skill set. And Agadosi has the size. Singleton has the athletic ability to be a linebacker. You have to take shots like that, and you hope that these guys could come in there and replace guys that replace your Nathan Gary's, replace your Shelton Gibson, those guys that, they were handed a roster spot. Now you have guys that can go out there and actually play out of those positions, and that's exactly what you need in late in the season when you need your depth to shine and when you're on your Super Bowl run, because frankly, how many starters that started the season for the Eagles were starting in that Super Bowl game? I know there were a couple positions that they were without them. You don't have your quarterback. You don't have your left tackle. Arguably two of the most important positions in football. So build that depth, build that competition, and let the best guys win that competition.
All right, let's hit our break here. We'll come back. I want to get into coming up Doug Peterson and how impressed I've been. You know, we know how good of a coach he is on the field, but last week there was this, some people would take it as coach speak. I really took it to heart, and I think it's going to be huge for the Eagles this year and their expectations in 2019. That's coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Sponsored by Blue Chew. This isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Listen up, Blue Chew. It's blue like the color blue. It's prescribed online. It ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, the most dreaded part of all of it, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON. Try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast today. All right, everybody, welcome back. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. So, Gino, we all know about the Dream Team season in 2011 that was nothing short of a nightmare. We remember in 2012, we remember the Redeem Team year that was even worse at 4-12. Because the Dream Team actually almost made the playoffs at 8-8. If the Jets beat the Giants on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, whatever, that year, the Eagles winning four straight down the stretch might have made the playoffs. 2015, Adam Schefter picked Sam Bradford to be Super Bowl MVP. There has been outside expectations that have seriously affected the Eagles.
That was a thing.
Adam Schefter picked the Eagles to win the Super Bowl in 2015, and he picked Bradford to be Super Bowl MVP, which is an incredible thing. And we all know how that ended too. It ended up in Chip Kelly being fired and the Eagles going 7-9 after blowing up the entire roster. So you see all of that. Doug Peterson was a part of those first two seasons I mentioned with the coaching staff as an assistant to Andy Reid. DeSean Jackson was a part of those years. Brandon Graham, Jason Peters. I love, and some people think, oh, when the coach says we don't let that outside noise affect the locker room, it is Coach Speak 101. It's page one in the Coach Speak book. When they teach you how to do press conferences as a head coach, that's one of the main quotes that they're going to give you. But I really took it to heart, because the message with Doug has changed based on what the team needs. You look at 2017, how he said that that team in the offseason was as talented as the Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers that he was a part of in, I think, 97 with Brett Favre. That was a team that wasn't really expected to go as far as they did, but they had the talent, and he knew he needed to light a fire under them and self-motivate them. Whereas now, those outside expectations are there, and he and all those players that went through those bad years now know to really downplay that and not let it get to their heads, or else you have a Vince Young situation all over again. So I don't know about you, but it goes to show the flexibility, not only on the field but off the field, of Doug Peterson, knowing when to change the message each year, knowing how to, you know, reform the culture, and it's something I really appreciate in his coaching style.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because this is like almost on a personal level for me. I'm going through this in my current job. It's like the idea of adapting or dying via culture, and culture is a very important thing no matter where you are. You can think back to your early days in elementary school. Did your teacher set a hard tone where nothing flew, or was she almost this quote player's coach where they let you do anything? And I'm going through that personally right now, trying to figure out in my job, is it worth this culture change to give up my happiness? And a lot of these players did that in the Dream Team, and a lot of these years with Chip Kelly and these cultures that really was about just going there, getting the best guys on paper, and who cares if they put in the work? We have the best team on paper, and that's exactly what they did.
And it was always predetermined culture too, right? I mean, that's the thing with Doug, is it changes. He lets the players dictate the culture, and that's why I love what he did here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the same thing with Chip Kelly every year. You heard the same, like, 10 phrases. Like,
every time.
Every time. Doug, it's something new every time, and he keeps you guessing. And that's what's great, because it is Darwinism in any world. You look outside, you see little ants on the ground. They're trying to build a home. Darwinism. It's survival of the fittest. You see deer. You see the ones that get hit, and you see the ones that are living in the woods. It's survival of the fittest. It's nature. It's the nature of humans, and the ones that are able to adapt are the ones that are going to survive. You see these teams right now that are just complete mayhem. Cincinnati, who knows what's going on to them? Not on with them. The Jets are kind of figuring their way out right now. You look at the NFC East right now, Lou. Look at these teams that are letting things slip out of their locker room. A lot like those Chip Kelly-esque years, the dream team years where you would hear reports out of the locker room from these, quote, anonymous sources. Right now, Dallas, Jerry Jones is just quoting today saying that they don't need a rushing champion to win a Super Bowl. That's not something you want to be talking about your MVP-esque running back when he's currently in a contract holdup. Trent Williams, the same thing. The best player, arguably, for the Washington Redskins is a no-show because he doesn't like the culture that is going on there and some shady stuff that went down behind closed doors. So for the Eagles to have evolved in such a short amount of time from the dream team, from the big people beat up little people, Chip Kelly, the scheme beats talent, Chip Kelly years, you're now in a year where 2016 was about growth. 2017 was about continued growth. 2018 was not about not being stuck on your laurels. And 2019 is now about focusing on the here and the now and focusing on about what you can control and what is in front of you. And these guys know that the 90 men in there with the coaches, with the scouting staff, with the executives know that they don't need anything else. They have everything they need in that building. They keep everything in that building. The only thing that is going to destroy them is listening to the outside noise. They have the talent, Lou. And to see them and Doug Peterson focus on this idea of, no, we're not talking about the Super Bowl. We're talking about the here and now. We're talking about that there's too many battles to overcome before we even get to that point is great, because that 2011 Dream Team team was, okay, Super Bowl or bust. Everybody knew it. Vince Young, who is a nobody, goes out there and says it, and now it becomes this thing that this is the Dream Team. This Eagles team is the real Dream Team. But nobody inside that building, they believe it, but they're not going to believe it until they lift that Lombardi trophy at the end of the year.
Yeah, exactly. They know it. They're just going to put it on ice now because they can't let it get to them like those old teams did. And they deserve the expectations. Absolutely. That's, you know, we are the outside noise. It's our job to do that. But for them, yeah, you got to shut that out, because if you start thinking about February now, you could have another slow start like last year, and you can't always hope for a miracle, winning three straight games and having Kirk Cousins blow it at the end. You know, that's not always going to be the case in such a strong conference like the NFC. Let's take one more break here. When we come back, this is the fun part now that I've been looking forward to. Geno squeezed a juicy what could have been Eagle story out of former Eagles GM Joe Banner yesterday. We got to get into that. That's going to be a fun thing coming up right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Don't go anywhere. All right, Geno. Here comes time for your big moment as a insider, as a reporter. You got the Corey Graham scoop a couple years ago, but this was really cool. Just talk about what happened here on Twitter. You were having a conversation with Jimmy Kemsky about the Kevin Cobb trade to Arizona in 2010, which led to Joe Banner dropping a bomb on Eagles Twitter.
Yeah, Jimmy Kemsky, if you don't know him, go follow him. One of the best beat writers for the Philadelphia Eagles. He was one of the first I ever followed on Twitter, so I followed him for quite a while. We tweet every now and then. He's very good at getting back to his followers, and he tweeted something about the training camp trades that Howie Roseman has partaken in, and he looked back, and the one that always catches my eye is Kevin Cobb for a second-round pick and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. So Joe Banner must be a fan of the WWE because he came off the top of a Hell in a Cell delivering one of the most ludicrous pieces of information that I don't think anybody outside of the Eagles organization knew, that before the lockout occurred, the Eagles had a trade in place to trade Kevin Cobb to the Arizona Cardinals for a first-round pick and a second-round pick, which he quoted saying that that first-round pick, which the Cardinals used to pick Patrick Peterson, would have ended up being the pick that the Eagles used to pick Patrick Peterson. And that just blew my freaking mind, because That is something that, until this day, I don't think anybody knew besides Joe Banner and who was ever in that building at any given time. And think, Lou, you say about one of the great what-ifs. This is arguably one of the top five what-ifs in Eagles history ever. To go from a team that was so neglected at the cornerback position to now having a guy who's a surefire Hall of Famer in your building, that could have changed the tides of the entire organization if that were to have gone through.
It you know, there was the trade before that could have gone down that didn't in 2008 when the Eagles nearly landed Larry Fitzgerald. And now here comes this scoop that you dropped, you pulled out of Joe Banner. Patrick Peterson could have been an Eagle. I mean, just go to 2011. Could you imagine Patrick Peterson and Asante Samuel on the field at the same time?
It would have been surreal, to be honest with you. And I mean, they still did win that trade. I'm still dumbfounded that Kevin Cobb garnered a second and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and almost got you Patrick Peterson in a second. That is unbelievable to me because he did some good things, but did any given time when you were watching Kevin Cobb, when they named him the future of the franchise, did you believe that he was a franchise quarterback?
No, he had the bright spot. I mean, like in 2009, when they did first name him after the 2009 season as the guy, I was optimistic because you saw that those two crazy good performances, week 2 and 3 against the Chiefs, or the Saints and the Chiefs. And then, yeah, you saw flashes in 2010, like against Atlanta, but you know, against Tennessee, he had a good game even though they lost. But yeah, you'd never thought, like, here's a guy that's going to be the face of your franchise and win you a Super Bowl. I mean,
no, he gave me that Sam Bradford-esque type feel to him when he was in the game. It's like, yeah, man, he'll flash, but
or even kind of like
injury
Nick Foles
concerns. He's going to crack under pressure, and he did. And he was in the league for not even two seasons after that. He retires in 2012.
It reminded me of Nick Foles, like 2013, where you had these like really good flashes, but you never thought, okay, he could be the one that you have for 10 years. He's someone for now that can, with a really good roster, you know, get you into contention and have these crazy big moments. But then there's also going to be these really low lows that we talked about with Foles too. So, yeah, that's crazy though, man. Like, you were just talking with Kemsky about the trade, and here comes Joe Banner saying, actually, we could have, instead of DRC, we could have added not only that second round pick, but Patrick Peterson, which then you pair up with Asante Samuel. I don't know if they would have, who knows, maybe they don't go out there and pay Nnamdi Asamoah then if they do that deal. And, I mean, would Chip have traded him? Probably not, because he's a defensive star, and Chip doesn't, he's not threatened by defensive guys because they're not going to really go after his, they're not going to threaten him getting the credit for his all-hailed, you know, holy scheme that he has. So he probably wouldn't have traded him, but who knows, man, how the ripple effect that this could have caused in Eagles history.
It really would have, but the one message that I can take out of this is that Howie Roseman, that was the first time I looked at a deal and said, man, we really like knocked this thing out of the park and won this deal. And you look back and that was Howie Roseman capitalizing on an asset that he knew after that point would have diminishing returns. And he really went out there and got the better end of the deal. You look at some deals in recent Eagles history. Look at Vinnie Curry. He said, no, I'm not paying you that kind of money. He went out there, got all that money from Tampa Bay. And then he says, okay, Tampa Bay cuts him. I'll bring him in for a percentage of what he was paid in Tampa. And he just knows better than anybody when to cut dead weight and when to bring guys in. And it just, that was really the start of his rise as an Eagles general manager. And that was a big trade to pay off at the time. It was a big move. There was really uncertainty at the position, but hey, you couldn't pass that up. And if they did, and I were to come out that they passed that up and they could have gotten a 1 and a 2, I would think I would have lost my, even a 2 in DRC, I would have lost my mind. But that really was something I was not expecting that for a Sunday afternoon, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it seems like the building blocks of this new Howie Roseman, you know, Howie season 2.0 kind of guy at GM. You can really see the building blocks now through all these leaked stories about nearly trading for Patrick Peterson. And even when he was part of the staff, but, you know, Andy Reid and Banner are trying to get Larry Fitzgerald from the Cardinals. And you see how, you know, the previous regime in that era where Howie was still with the organization, you see these moves trying to be made. And now it's not surprising at all, especially after seeing what Chip Kelly did, that Howie is now built to be the GM that he is.
Yeah, and it's great that they have the continuity at the ownership level, because I think Jeffrey Lurie is a very big proponent of a lot of these moves as of recent because he's lived through it. He's lived at the, we could have made this move, but we didn't make this move. The Super Bowl season in 2004, they went out and made those moves. So now he dipped his toes in the water originally in those early 2000 seasons, started to back off a little bit once the team started to get over the hill a little bit. Then once Chip got out of town, he gave full control to Howie Roseman and said, go all in because I trust you, Howie. There was a reason he kept him in the back corner of the NovaCare complex because he believed in Howie Roseman, and belief in any individual could take you a long, long way, especially when they have a proven track record like Howie Roseman does.
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to wrap up the show here. Nearly a incredible move that could have landed the Eagles' Patrick Peterson. Credit to Geno. Nice job, man, pulling that scoop from Joe Banner. Now you have two iconic moments as an Eagles reporter, so props to you, bro. All right, that's going to do it for today's edition of Locked on Eagles. Me and Gino will be back. Well, Gino's going to be off tomorrow. I'll be back, though, getting into some different stuff with you. And then Wednesday, Thursday, we might have another weekend podcast as well. We got 4 to 5 podcasts a week right here on the Locked on Eagles podcast, part of the Locked on Podcast Network. Your team. Every day, please subscribe to the show if you could. A 5-star rate and a review would go a long way. And also, if you want to keep the conversation going, hit us up on Twitter. Follow us at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiase, L-O-E, and at Gino _L-O-E. All right, as always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.